talk about the call of the day while any stragglers come in. I don't want to thank all of you for coming today. This is the special interest group for the coaching and psychotherapist communities through the ICF. And this thing is sponsored through the Life Coaching Council, of which Lynn Meinke is the chair within the ICF. And these things are value-added service that the ICF offers members. And if you have an ICF member, I'd like to really encourage you to consider it. And you can attend up to two of the calls without being an ICF member, and because this is a value-added service for ICF members. Patty is going to be our speaker today. I heard of Patty through one of the virtual community calls that the ICF did, and I listened to her talk, and it was incredible, and I immediately thought this would really be a great person to bring to this SIG, because she is an expert on a very important issue, namely sexual issues in people's lives, and she does a lot of coaching around that, and a lot of the information that we're going to be exposed to today is going to be, can also be found in her book, The Art of Sex Coaching. I'll be sending a link out for that book with the CEU certificates after I hear back from all of you on that. Patty Britton and Art of Sex Coaching. I'm going to let Patty do a more detailed introduction of herself here. Without further ado, I want to bring Patty on the call here because she's got a lot of incredible information to share with us. And we're going to be having about a 10 to 15 minute question and answer discussion period after a 45 minute presentation just to give you a structure for the call today. And I want to introduce Patty. I really want to thank her for coming to the call today.
Are we ready to go, Tom?
We're ready to go.
I obviously wasn't being recorded. Well, I want to begin by thanking the three of you for attending this, and I think that forbidden is a good word that Summit selected as the beginning of your password key, because there is a forbidden nature to the sexuality issues that confront human beings. And I think it's telling that we have such a small group show up, because it can be a very scary topic. And if we were all sitting in a room together, I think your heads would be nodding and we'd be smiling and looking at each other. Sexuality is such a complex issue in a person's life. And as a coach, and as a psychotherapist, by the way, it's something that can be very daunting, that can be very scary to discuss with a client, because most people who are in the helping professions, whether they're coaches or they're therapists or counselors or any other nomenclature, have not had the training and the facility and the personal processing to sit comfortably within our own skin to address a sexual concern. So my goal today is to enlighten you as much as I can in a very brief period of time, because this talk that I'm giving you could be 8 hours, and frankly, even 8 days if we wanted to get trained in this topic of sex coaching. And so I'm going to breeze through a lot of material to hopefully, by the end of the call, allow you to feel that you truly understand the nature of this subfield of both coaching and sexology, complex coaching. And I'm going to talk a little bit about who I am and my background, and, you know, do a brief commercial on that. And then I'm going to give you a little bit of information about the evolution of my own practice, why I'm sitting on this call as a coach and a sexologist. I'm going to talk a little bit about what is sex coaching. I'm going to bring in a little bit of the concept of the broad field of sexology, which is the study of what people do sexually and how they think and feel about it. I'm going to hone in on what this SIG is all about, which is that distinction between coaching and therapy, and I'm going to make the distinction, hopefully successfully, between what is sex coaching and therapy and sex coaching and sex therapy. Then I'm going to talk about the model that I've designed called the MEDES, or the MEDES model, and I'm going to go over a couple of live examples. If we have time, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a couple of example cases, and then we'll have closure, and then we'll open it up for a discussion. So, I hope that you're buckled in and ready to launch into the discussion of human sexuality as a component of the coaching practices. And I want to start off by saying that for those of you who don't know me, and I'm assuming that you don't know me, although you may, I've been in my field of sexology, the broader field of sexology, for over 30 years, and even though I have a very youthful voice, I've been in the field as long as some of the pioneers in this country, and it is my passion and my love. And I have a website, yoursexcoach.com, which I invite you to go to at some point, maybe not during the call, but at some point. And when you visit yoursexcoach.com, you'll also see a box where you can sign up for my monthly newsletter, which is a virtual newsletter. It's very intense in that it's about 12 to 15 pages a month that I construct, including, and this is why I'm honing in on it, including a sex coaching session, which is a Q&A, a real Q&A that I call from the internet, because my website excuse me, is linked to other key websites. I'm in a constellation of websites that send questions and real-life people to me who ask questions. And I do my best in a very quick response, 300 words or so, to hone in on what I consider a real-life sex coaching session and give them that information via email, which becomes part of the newsletter. Plus, for fun, because I believe in the role and the importance of humor, and I'm having a good time. There's also quite a comprehensive listing of movies that I review. I do a lot of reviewing of Hollywood movies. Up until the filmmaker, so movies are one of our passions. But speaking of passion, I'm a speaker, I'm a workshop leader, I'm a clinician in terms of having clients. I've been seeing clients since the very beginning of my work in the field, but specifically in a private practice since 1993, so 12 years or so, actually running up to 13 this February. And I'm the incoming president of the leading organization in this country devoted to sexuality and sexual health advocacy and concerns, AASECT.org. That's the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. Any of you who have a client who needs to speak with or be under the care of a certified sex educator, counselor, or therapist, SECT.org is your place to go. That's your go-to organization for referrals, because in that organization we are the body in this country that does the most in certification for qualified experts. So just getting right into it, my experience in coaching, believe it or not, started in the late 80s, early 90s, when I encountered this thing called CoachU.com and this amazing man called Thomas Leonard. And at that time, I was living in Manhattan, where the beginning of my coaching practice began, and I began to realize that even though I'd been trained in clinical sexology and sex therapy slash counseling slash education, there was something about coaching as a modality, as a philosophical model, and as a practical model that really appealed to me. And so I began having my own coaches guide me and train me, one of whom was Cheryl Richardson herself. I was one of her last clients, and it was a very weepy day when she said, I'm going to be stopping my practice because I need to write a book, and the rest is history. I also had a mentor and a very close friend, Betty Dodson, who is a very renowned sexologist, whose website is BettyDodson.com, and someone who, in the field of sexuality, is quite famous. As I began to evolve my own model for working with clients, both integrating what I knew in sexology, the study of human sexual behavior, and Betty's approach, which was very much about a one-on-one work with, at that time, pre-orgasmic women, I began to realize that coaching was really the path I wanted to go down, and that I wanted to embrace things like the coaching proficiencies. You know all this stuff, so I don't need to get into it. But in my book, I talk specifically about the coaching proficiencies and talk about things like revealing the client to themselves, navigating by the curiosity, recognizing perfection in every situation, which is also one of my signatures in every sex coaches, is to deep apologize. and to not use pathologizing ideology or language when we look at a client and their sexual concern or concerns, but rather use the coaching mentality when we address those concerns. Some of the other proficiencies in coaching, of course, are things like clear communication, observing what's going on, being the champion for our clients, entering into new territories, I would add, which includes going outside the box, creating supportive environments or optimal environments, and respecting the client's humanity. So the proficiencies as I was developing my book in particular seem to have the most salient crossover between what is going on in coaching and what goes on in the sex coaching room. And client is the focus of your attention when you're doing sex coaching. And there are two other kind of philosophical tenets that override and infuse the coaching process. And the other two are encouraging the client to build attraction. And I'm assuming that the three of you, four of you, are steeped in understanding about the power of attraction versus promotion, so I'm not going to go into that. But the overarching theme of all sex coaching, and I would hope it would bleed over into all psychotherapy, but I see this in coaching as one of the dominant themes that we all share, and that is that empowerment is the key. So a lot of the work that I do as a sex coach is very much focused around empowering the client. The client is the driver. I'm the teacher in the driver's ed seat in that car. They're driving the vehicle. And sometimes in therapy, I'm now making the distinctions between coaching and therapy. The therapist is the driver and the patient, as it's often called, or the client is in the passenger seat. And I have flipped that around and see that as true to the coaching paradigm. So in terms of what I see and I've evolved is the 10 basic principles of sex coaching. Sex coaching contains the following principles. First of all, it's toward future outcomes. And this also relates very specifically to a distinction that I make between coaching and therapy. That much of therapy is focused on the past. Much of therapy involves pushing that rewind button and not the play or the fast forward button. So future outcomes is really a driving force of sex coaching. Two is positive reinforcement. Whatever is going on in that client's life, is to be reinforced on what if it's doing harm to that person, and then it's our role to either refer out for therapy or counseling or to address it from coaching perspective as best we can. Third, the coach is the guide. It's not a hierarchical model. It's that side-by-side in the car model where the coach is sitting there and is a participant in the process as a guide. You've already heard me use the language that it's client and not patient, and that it's not a pathologizing model. To me, and this is a debate that goes on the listserv for AASECT, ASAG, that goes on all the time about the distinctions between the different models that we all use in the broad field of psychology and for human sexuality. And client is the term that I believe is the most powerful term to use in the coaching paradigm. Number five of the principles is that the client will always set you straight. And I suppose this is true of therapy as well. I'm assuming that those of you on the call, because you're in this specific hearing, also understand that in good therapy, the same thing is true. You might say, well, I'm sensing that because your mother was the dominant yada, yada, yada. And the client was like, no. That has nothing to do with it. I'm talking about my... And so the client is really the focal point and is the power of where the process goes. The other distinction about sex coaching versus therapy and one of the principles is that sex coaching takes place in a short span of time. In my book, I open the book with a chapter that has a story in it called The Two-Session Man. And he really got what he came to get in two sessions. And that was all he needed. And he, the determinant of how much coaching he needed, was really the driving force for that. Sex coaching can be, for the very rare case, a one-session, using a model I'm going to get to in a minute, where permission is really the key of what that person came to get. And it can proceed over a period of time and morph and evolve into not a weekly session basis, but more of what I would call stop coaching, where I often begin my coaching process with once a week and then work into a once every 2 week model, and then we elongate the time in between. Sex coaching, like some sex therapy, is very based on what goes on between the sessions. And I'm sure those of you who are on the call find that that's probably true for you no matter which hat you put on. But there's something really important, especially in working with sex concerns, that the client has an opportunity to take the knowledge and take the skills that they're developing in the sex coaching process and integrate that. So a lot of what sex coaching is about is the in-between, which is driven by what I call home assignments. I do not like the word work. I make a lot of distinctions about language in my book and in my work. Some of my colleagues like to call it home play, but I think home assignment is a nice neutral term. What happens in sex coaching is highly experiential and experimental. Oftentimes, in the book I talk about, and if we have time, I'll kind of dance over those, 46 unique sexual concerns that I have witnessed and processed in the 13 years of being a sex coach. That's a lot. That's a lot of different kinds of sexual problems that a client might come to you for. And sometimes we have to get very experimental about what they may do. I once had a client come to me, one of my a post-prostate surgery client who came to see me, one of my earlier male clients, who was not able to produce ejaculation, and this was very troubling to him. And he came in to see me and began by telling me that he was an impotent man. The truth was that he wasn't an impotent man. He had learned this different language, the I word, as I call it, impotency. And what he had been able to do was, through his doctor, secure a penile pump, which enabled him to produce an erection. But what was happening for him is that he wasn't producing ejaculate. And that was his troubling issue, not the erectile dysfunction, but the lack of ejaculation. It made him feel less of a man, that he wasn't a man because he wasn't seeing that result. And so, being experimental and working outside the box, I sensed he was a very open being. And this man was willing to conduct a ritual when he got home to actually bury his grief about his loss of his ejaculation capacity. And by doing this ritual in the woods where he lived, he was able to heal that for himself. And when he returned after doing that and shared what he had done, I was so amazed by this man, his willingness, his openness, and his experimental nature and his free self. And he felt that he had really overcome the issues that he had come to see me about in the first place because he was willing to work with me in a highly experimental and experiential basis. Similarly, the coach is a participant in what I call the healing process. To me, sex coaching is about healing, which is a word I elect to use, because to me, healing is to make whole. And when one of our clients comes to us and they're, quote, feeling broken or damaged, it's our opportunity to facilitate that healing for them. One of the distinctions between sex coaching and sex therapy has very much to do with the emotional aspects of what's going on in a client's life. And a sex coach, to me, from my perspective, can very much be a vehicle for containing the client's emotionality. In other words, we need to learn how to sit with the ability to contain or receive the emotions that are going on for our client. But unlike a therapist, the coach does not address or process those emotions. And I think that's probably one of the greatest distinctions that I observe and that I speak about when I see the differences between coaching and therapy. Sex therapy and group therapy is about, in fact, eliciting emotion, processing emotion, and allowing the client or the patient to resolve emotional distress. In coaching, that is not the goal. The goal is to allow it to be expressed and to move back into what's the goal, what are the results we're working towards, and let's get back to it. So that's something that we may want to talk about when we have our Q&A session. Some of the guidelines I use are that there has to be very tight and careful boundary setting. I think it's very important when we're talking about a topic that's so highly charged, that's sex and sexuality, that we set very distinct and careful boundaries with our clients. Just like the code of ethics for ICF, the code of ethics for AASCCT, very stringent and rigid. And in the field of sex coaching, there are coaches, and they're not coaches that are members of ICF or Coachville or any of our organizations that we think of as professional coaches, but I'm here to tell you that there are people calling themselves coaches in this country and probably around the world who do in fact use their bodies as part of the work. In fact, my own mentor, Betty Dodson, calls herself a sex coach, and is in the process of releasing a series of DVDs around sex coaching that are really very much about body-based coaching. And unlike myself, I do not touch clients, and I think that anyone who wants to endeavor in the touch of clients to be extremely careful about the legalities of this, and also has to believe that what they are doing is the highest service they can provide within legal boundaries. And the legal boundaries are very squishy in some states, and they're very clear in other states. What happens is that when body coaching is taking place, and I do talk about body coaching in my book, there are two primary people who are renowned for their work in this. One is Joe Kramer, who has the Erotic Bodywork School in San Francisco Bay Area. Of course, you're not surprised to hear that. And the other is Betty Dodson, who is in Manhattan, and of course you're not surprised to hear that, because they're two of the, in a sense, most free cities in our culture, in our overarching culture in our country, that really, because of the density of population and the sophistication of the multicultural setting, allow for a diversity of services to exist. And there are no laws that in any way prevent body coaching from going on. What are the other guidelines about sex coaching that I think is a very powerful one? And it may be one of those distinctions between sex coaching and therapy, although I have many friends and colleagues who are phenomenal sex therapists, and I know that they do use this occasionally when it's facilitative. And that's the element of personal disclosure. When I begin my process of sex coaching with a client, and I mean by client either an individual or a couple, there's always in the very first session an articulation of the boundaries of confidentiality, and I go into great detail about how this is a safe relationship and how what is disclosed stays with each of us in this privatized setting. There are times when it's very significant and can be facilitated toward the well-being of our client to use personal disclosure. And it might be something where I might say something like, now I'm going to share something with you for your benefit, not mine, so that you understand that I have had an experience that may inform what you're going through. For example, I'm working with a woman right now who went through a surgical menopause at age 29. She's a very, very complex case, who was also someone who had a very enmeshed relationship with her mother and has a hatred of men, and met me after years and years and years and years and years of psychotherapy, ready to, quote, work on her sex life. And I get this a lot. I get a lot of people who have been in therapy for short-term or long-term. And oddly enough, I have a lot of people who seek me out because they are in therapy and their therapist will not, cannot work on sexuality. This is a very, very, very common theme that I experience as a sex coach. And so what goes on in cases like this is that sometimes when I'm saying things as she's exploring cyber dating, for example, I can say something like, well, when I was cyber dating, what I found is that unless you're really clear in setting your profile in this way, what's going to happen is you're going to end up wasting a lot of time. So my coaching tips are, how about you reformat this, this, and this in your profile, and I think that will be more effective for you. That's a very little disclosure, but it facilitates that client on his or her journey forward. The other thing is that I'm very big on specific language, and I've already shared some of that with you. And the sex coaching process, very distinct from the psychotherapeutic process, the language is assessment, not practice. We don't use the DSM in any of its incarnations. And we don't do analysis, we evaluate. So the guidelines for sex coaching really, in a sense, spill over into what facilitates the process of well-being, of healing, or accomplishing goals, results-driven, so that that client, at the end of that time with us as a sex coach, can feel as though he or she has accomplished what he or she came to get. Let me take a minute and just talk a little bit about how sex coaching can be delivered, because I think that, that it's relevant in a way to some of the distinctions again about therapy and coaching. Because I know that we're in a conversation, although I'm doing a monologue, where we're really honing in on A versus B. And so sex coaching, of course, can be done in person, just as any therapy can. And the bulk of it for me and for some other of the sex coaches that I know is just as an all coaching done by telephone. In addition, with the advent of all the great technology we have, we can run a teleclass, a telecourse, as we're doing right now. We can have group sessions online. We can have training programs online. And we can do a lot with video teleconferencing, with all of the great technology that exists today. And frankly, that's emerging. I don't know how many of you follow the techno revolution that's going on. But there's so much that's going to be demanded for content, for example, for cell phones, so that you could have your own streaming training courses or sessions using your own telephone and having that be a program that's fed as a stream. And you could certainly get, you can get an inexpensive, really high-quality camcorder today and videotape yourself talking to a client and have that be virtual or live, or you can send it out through an iPod cast and be reaching millions of people at the same time. So sex coaching, like all coaching, has many venues in which it operates. One of the methods that I use and have used for sex coaching is very much the online advisor. I'm the original sex coach for iVillage.com, which is one of the largest women's networks at the time. But I stopped working. I worked there for 6 years and took a sabbatical, and they replaced me with someone, another model. But the advice column online or in a newspaper is a very powerful way of delivering sex coaching, of course, in a more generic way. And just to give you a kind of sense about some of the models that I've informed my own sex coaching, I've talked a little bit about what sexology is. Sorry about that. One of the hallmarks of clinical sexology is a model designed by a renowned psychologist and sex therapist and sex researcher, Dr. Jack Annon, A-N-N-O-N, who unfortunately died 10 days ago. And we are mourning his death right now. Because one of the greatest contributions he made, and he made a lot, is development of this model of approach to use as a, it's a really interesting tool to use as either a coach or a psychotherapist or a sex therapist, called the Plissett model. And I don't know how many of you have heard of this. It's taught very much in sexology graduate schools, such as the school that I earned my PhD from and I am on faculty of. That's the Institute for the Advanced Study of Human Sexuality in San Francisco. And if you're interested in more, it's iash.edu. iash.edu. This model is very interesting because what it does is you can divide it into components or sections, and it really defines the process of therapy or coaching, and then it makes the distinction. Here's how it works. He is his own realm. He for permission. So, just as I mentioned earlier, sometimes a client may come to us as a sex coach, and what they're really looking for is validation and permission. You know, I'm thinking of exploring my bisexuality. I know it's what I am. I know it's how I am. It's something that I fantasize about, I dreamed about, and I feel that I'm ready, but I'm scared. And so it may take just that little touch of interaction with that client who's ready for that it's okay message to have the permission to explore that side of who they are. LI, in the PACIF model, stands for limited information. Now, limited information may be something like, well, let's talk about some of the factors that may be affecting your ability to produce an erection. It may be that the fact that you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day and drink a six-pack every night is totally impeding your ability to be erect. So let's talk about your health standards. Let's talk about your wellness and your fitness. Let's talk about the dynamics in your relationship. Or let's talk about where a woman's clitoris is located and why it is that you're unable to reach orgasm as a woman. Those are the kinds of things that are in the PLACIT model limited information. Then, the middle phase, there are four phases of this model. The middle phase is SS, specific suggestion. And those are things like, well, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go home and I'd like you to take out a mirror. And I'd like you to become familiar with your anatomical parts down there. Because, you know, unless you know how you're structured and you know what feels good to you, it's going to be very hard to tell John what it is you need to stimulate you to orgasm. Or it may be, you know, you're a couple who, I had a couple, this is a sweet story and I have it in the book, it's a little red car. I had a couple who were coming in to see me who said they weren't having sex. And it turned out that actually the assessment criteria that I defined for them was uneven desire. And it was kind of like one of them always wanted sex and the other one never did. And so it got to be an issue and they stopped having sex at all. And the reason was they couldn't negotiate or navigate or compromise on how they could do that. And they were busy and they had kids, the typical model of what I get almost every day on the telephone. And what I suggested to them under specific suggestions was there any way they could get away? And this is a very common specific suggestion that a sex coach would make. And I said, what about going away for a weekend? Can you go sit there and leave the kids and just get away and be free and, you know, in a sense, reconnect with that love and that passion that was there in the beginning before you got so tied up with kids and work and busyness. And they said, well, you know, actually we have an RV, a recreational vehicle, and we love to take it and drive out to the desert and just park it and go explore what's around. Well, they did that. And it turned out that they rekindled. This was how they reconnected their spark, by the specific suggestion of getting away and spending time honing in on what might be the way that they could actually take this suggestion and implement it. And lo and behold, what happened is they were able to reconnect sexually, romantically, passionately, and they decided that they could use their RV, which I call the little red car, just embellish it and call it something different in my book. And every time they looked out the back window, they got that feeling again. So it's such a great way to use a model that allows you as the coach to give the permission to provide limited information, which, by the way, can also cycle in and out over time with that person or that couple, and the specific suggestions. And then the last phase of the model, IT, again, PLISSIT is PLISSIT, is intensive therapy. Many of my colleagues refer to the PLISSIT model as a way of making the distinction between where counseling or coaching and therapy break off and take off. And so intensive therapy would be where, as a coach, I refer out if they're having deep emotional issues or severe issues with a traumatized past, for example. I've had some people come to me who were deeply enraged in their relationship or about their primary relationship with a parent, and those are the candidates for referring out to psychotherapy. So that's a model that I wanted you to have, I wanted to share with you. And the other thing I wanted to share with you is that there's something called the Sexual Attitude Reassessment, or the SAR. And for any of you who are interested in learning more about sexuality as a practitioner, the SAR model is one of the most powerful models that we have in the broad field of sexology, because it's a personal processing model. It's a model of experience of the broad, almost infinite possible range of sexual expression that humans are capable of. And often they take, at my school, they're actually a 6-day, 60-hour experience, which is really intensive. It is totally life-altering to go through a SAR at the Institute. At ASECT, we actually piggyback a SAR onto the annual conference. And that annual conference is explained, and this year it's going to be next week in June, Louis. It's a wonderful way to learn more about sexuality and some of the issues that I'm talking about today from a clinical standpoint and a research standpoint and a practical standpoint. But a SAR is an essential component to being able to work with a couple, with a client, as an effective sex coach. So just to kind of hone in for some time now on this distinction between sex coaching and sex therapy or therapy. Again, as I said, sex coaching works on the present, not on the past. Sex coaching is client-centered. The client is the driver of the car, and certainly Rogerian therapy is similar. There are other similar modalities in therapy. In my book, I talk about 30 psychotherapy and traditional means for assisting someone to overcome a difficulty that inform my own practice as a sex coach. However, client-centered is, to me, much more a hallmark of the coaching process. It's a fluid process. It doesn't have a beginning, a middle, and an end per se. It's very circular. And it's dynamic, unlike some, for example, psychoanalytic approach, where the therapist sits and, in a sense, with the clipboard in hand, makes side comments, but it's really a stream of consciousness kind of therapeutic process the client, or in this case, the patient goes through. In sex coaching, it's very proactive and interactive, dynamic and participatory. I speak a lot in the sex coaching process. It is a conversation with an educational spin and an empowering coaching flavor. It's also independence-oriented and empowerment-focused, meaning that the goal in sex coaching is as quickly as possible to get this person not dependent on you, not thinking he or she is going to be spending the next 18 years. I once had a client in New York in my practice who came to see me for a sexology-related issue, a woman. And she sat in front of me and she said, "I've been hiding a secret for 30 years. And I've been in psychotherapy, in this case it was psychoanalysis, for 18 years twice a week. And I've never discussed sex. Now I need to talk about it. That's why I'm here." I nearly fell off my chair, I have to tell you. So there's a different flavor and focus to the emancipation of the client as quickly as possible. And again, it's goal-oriented, it's results-driven, it's a fast process. It's also very behaviorally based, and again, I know that using my training in clinical sexology, some of the models of sex therapy that are employed are very cognitive behavioral. Having studied the work of Albert Ellis, who is one of my heroes, I also was his patient for a few sessions, which was absolutely a startling experience. Albert Ellis's rational emotive behavior therapy is a very powerful cognitive behavioral process, but it's not behavioral in the way that sex coaching is. In an Albert Ellis session, the behavior is mental and perhaps verbal and writing. That's what REBT is about. But it doesn't mean you're going to go home and try masturbation with a different technique, or go home and write an erotic fantasy that will allow you to connect with one of your arousal cues, or go home and practice how to be better as a lover to your partner. It's a very different interpretation of behavioral. There also are some other distinctions. I'm just taking a look now and see if there's anything I've forgotten. It's really personal education. The way that I have interpreted what I believe sex coaching to be, and again, a lot of this is in my book, The Art of Sex Coaching, which is a book that, interestingly enough, Norton & Company asked me to write, and it was published in about a year ago in 2005 in March. And at that time when they asked me to write, which would have been early 2004, as I recall, there was some Twitter about sex coaching, but the words hadn't really come out into the public speaking. And certainly in the coaching community, we do not have people who are fluid and who are even comfortable with this notion of a subspecialty in life or personal coaching called sex coaching. And it's my goal and my wish and my intent to help spread word about what it means and how important it is. Because you know yourself that often a client will come in and they may in fact have a sexual concern that's blocking them from career success or the personal relationship. And it's not to be trivialized, yet it requires being comfortable, savvy, and skilled to address the complexities and the sensitivity of a sexual concern. And that's why I think it's so important that we begin to speak more openly about this thing called sex coaching and begin to bring more of information about sex coaching out of the coaching discussion. Certainly, it's part of the discussion on the ASEC listserv and in the ASEC organization. There is a movement in our organization, in fact, to certify paraprofessionals as sex coaches. It hasn't gone anywhere in a year because it's a controversial topic even in the field of sexology, but it's something that must be addressed, in my opinion. So what I'd like to do is kind of talk a little bit about some of the concerns that men have, that women have, that couples have, and that are kind of beyond the norm, and give you a flavor of the kinds of reasons that someone may come in for sex coaching. And then I'm going to, just tell me how much more time I have. And, you know, I know I'm kind of reaching that point right now.
Patty, I was just going to jump in, and because you provide so much good content here, I'm wondering if you could wrap up in the next couple minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I almost feel like you just did a great wrap up, but if there's something more you want to add, I'd really love to hear the kind of questions and stuff.
The one thing that I'd like to say, because I've been attempting to go global and really honor all of you and your need to make these discernments between coaching and therapy. The one thing that I want to say that may be helpful to you if you never do look at my website and you never do get the book, is that the model I evolved is a great coaching model, and it's a wellness coaching model. And I call it the MEAPS model: mind, emotions, body and body image, energy, and spirit. And I use this model to assess what's blocked in that client's experience and to design an action plan. And so perhaps we can talk more about that, but I wanted to share that with you in particular because I know that in coaching, there's also a movement toward health and wellness coaching, and in effect, that is part of what this is. That's all I'm going to say for now.
Great. Wow. Patty, thank you so much. I kind of want to turn it over to everyone here who is on the call. Just Kristen, you and Sharon, and Andrew. I'm sure you've been taking all this in and maybe having some reactions or some impressions or might ask some questions. So I would like to hear from all of you for a little bit.
And don't be shy.
I'm going to jump in. This is Elizabeth in your alternate that I was here. I came from the UK, in service of full disclosure, and I want to say thank you so much, Patty. I've heard you speak twice now, and I think that one point I'd like to to address is that I think that so much of the concern that I have had within the coaching profession of people addressing perhaps prematurely the issues around sex as a coach is the inexperience of so many coaches, the young and the new coaches who really have thought about even when to refer out. So I'm so glad that you addressed that. And again, thank you so much for coming to this call.
Well, thank you for attending this call in addition to the other one.
No, my pleasure.
That's great.
Well, this is here. I'll check in. I mean, this, it really came with a different expectation than what this turned out to be, but it was so interesting that there was every reason in the world to stay. So I just, you know, found it fascinating to learn more about what, what the model is for sex coaching per se. I've always thought, generally it was an area that was really new. And I probably will still not get into it, but it's just very interesting to hear your whole, your approach, your background, some of the distinctions between coaching and therapy. It tends to be a thing that just generally does not come up in the work that I do.
Right. That makes sense.
Except in very, the way, it's just in sort of unremarkable ways, I would say. So it's just been fascinating for me, and I really appreciate your, giving us this time, and Tom, to you for setting this up.
Sure. I'm first of all, thank you so much for sharing what you did. It's really expansive to hear how you work, under the coaching model, and it sounds like it's wonderful work that you do, and I love the idea, and I hear the passion that you have around spreading the word and helping others do the kind of work that you do. I have a question around sexual compulsivity issues, because I work as a recovery coach working with those in recovery from addiction, and I'm sure that you have clients at times who come in with various questions about their sexual habits or their whatever it is that may feel excessive to them or may feel that it might be causing high risk or dangerous or potentially life-threatening even behaviors. And I was just wondering how you approach those situations, those clients.
Well, the success rate is mixed, because sometimes the level of compulsivity with OCD, for example, or addiction, is something that is beyond coaching, in my opinion. And the reason I say that is because I believe that the best therapy and the best coaching works in a comprehensive model, which means that you have a team that's holistic, so that sometimes a client really does need medication, for example, because they're not willing or able to change behaviorally or cognitively. I had a client, my most extreme case of this, actually had probably the most world-famous OCD psychologist in New York referred his most difficult case to me because he couldn't do anything for the man. And we worked cognitively and behaviorally on changing how the OCD was affecting him, but also non-pathologically, because this was a guy who happened to be a flasher, which isn't funny. He happened to go into Central Park in New York and flash, and his fetish was so extreme and unusual, and very few people could contain that and not be upset by it. It was a very harmless, benign fetish and behavior, but one that could get him in trouble. And so the psychologist felt that my approach might be helpful for him, and I got him to reframe it and to redirect it with a new behavior step. But that was a success story. I also had an abysmal failure with a man who was compulsively hired a dominatrix week after week would deplete his family resources and his energy and time.
who kept going from dominatrix to dominatrix and was actually someone who was so manipulative, so compulsive and destructive to himself that I kept insisting he seek a psychiatrist for some medication relief. Because sometimes we can't far enough in talk. You know, talk is healing, but sometimes a client is unable to make the shift from talk alone. And we live in a universe right now where there is so much psychoeducation going on, and it's complemented by the medications that exist. We have to also be careful that people aren't totally in the medicalized model and are being denied the talk so that they can heal the source and the cause. Because that's the tightrope we all walk today, especially in, I would say, in mental health and in sexology in particular, medicalization of treatment. For example, early ejaculators are easily, well, not easily, but can be easily treated through talk coaching. The truth is that some of them really benefit from having Paxil or Prozac for a brief period of time to slow their ejaculatory reflux so they can get on firm ground. Does that answer your question?
It's helpful, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a complex issue. The sexual compulsivity issue is very charged with a lot of judgment in it and a lot of language in it that makes the person a victim and a disease. And I believe we have to be very careful about alleviating the disease model but helping the client to heal and be well and not do harm to himself or others or herself and others. So you're really working in one of the toughest areas of wellness that exists. And
I salute you for doing it. I don't know if I could do that full time.
I mean, just to clarify, I typically work with clients who already have curbed their behaviors considerably.
Oh, good, okay.
And who are then wanting to really create a life beyond that.
Perfect. Okay.
Right.
Got it, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the kinds of clients who come to me from that background, often that's just blurred into their history and not an issue. The focus becomes less on recovery and more on the sexual goals they want to achieve.
I see. Thank you.
Do you understand the distinction? It's kind of an interesting distinction.
Sure.
And if you wanted to talk more with me, please feel free to, you know, either call me, or, especially since we're in the LA area.
Thank you.
Or email me. My phone number is 909-336-1140. That's for all of you. And my primary email is Dr. Patty, DrPattixox. @AOL.com.
So Patty, just I'm going to repeat that one more time. I didn't have my parents' voice.
And my email is Dr. Patty, DrPattixox@AOL.com.
Okay.
And my center home, it's my center's number. It's 909-336-1140. And I'm in the mountains, an hour and a half east of LA.
Okay.
Yeah, I also work in LA.
You're in LA time zone.
You're in the LA time zone.
I'm
in the Pacific time. Yeah. So, any other questions or takeaways for any of you that I can help you with?
Christine, did you want to show some hands?
No. I really appreciated, you know, thinking about the principles, thinking about the differences between you know, therapy and coaching and looking at something as significant as sexual problems in a really good coaching, solid coaching perspective. So I just want to thank you.
Oh, thank you. This is Elizabeth, and I would just like to ask you a question, if I might, and that is for permission to email you with a couple of questions and invitations to speak again in another forum, Dr. Patty, because I really believe that, you know, before when I spoke, I talked about inexperienced coaches, and I was just thinking about some of the very seasoned coaches that I know and have been in conversations with around our profession in terms of its growth and how we step at it in terms of our ethics and standards and so forth. And when just the word sex is introduced in these conversations, even amongst experienced coaches, face-to-face, there can be the eye roll or the averted glance, or there can be the giggles, you know, snickers and what have you. And I think that to hear this multiple times is to really grasp it and to deepen how we are as coaches and what we hold, you know, for ourselves and our clients. So, yeah, I just email you.
Absolutely. I welcome that. I mean, this is my life's work. This is my passion. This is my legacy, in a sense, in my book so far. Anyway, because I'm not planning to leave the planet immediately. But, you know, it's a lightning rod topic. And very, very few people who are professionally skilled in many diverse areas of the health profession are skilled and schooled in the sexological part. And we are sexual beings. We are all sexual, conception to death. It's a natural, healthy part of who we are as human beings. And it affects each and every one of us, regardless of what we choose to do about it. So the sexuality dynamic is present all the time. And the more we can learn to embrace it in a healthy way as coaches and professionals, the more we can better serve our clients. That sounds like a great closing speech, doesn't it? But I sincerely mean that. And, you know, Pat Williams wrote the foreword to the book Your Sex Coaching because he believes that it is a component of the wheel of life, that it is essential that we as coaches know how to comfortably address this. Doesn't mean everyone has to become skilled and savvy and dive into the sex coaching arena. It means we have to stop being scared and be willing to say, John or Jane, seems as though this is really getting in your way. Maybe you would benefit from talking to so-and-so. Because it's there.
Hey, this is Tom. I want to start wrapping up. I just really thank you for being on the call here, Patty. And one of the things I find really helpful and refreshing is the principle that you bring to this apply to any cutting edge or lightning rod or controversial area of life that coaches may encroach upon. You know, whether it's ADD coaching or kind of my mind's blank, but there's a lot of areas that coaching is going to encroach, and when we see a model like you being able to fully integrate the coaching paradigm into something that is so potentially therapy-like and make the conversations you make, you become a role model to the coaching profession in more areas than just the area of psychology. And so that's very important, and I appreciate you for that. And that's one of the reasons I wanted you to be on the call, because all those principles you were elucidating, they go far beyond dealing with sexual issues. They deal with any other issue, it's not a big one, a steady, strongly emotionally charged issue within the coaching process. You know, it's an area where people start questioning whether they're in therapy or not. But, you know, your model helps clarify and elucidate how we can do those things and maintain a coaching paradigm. So I really appreciate you being here and helping us to deepen our understanding of that. Anyone want the final word today? If not, I'm looking forward to our next call. It'll probably be in April because I'm moving to like quarterly calls here. There's a good chance there will also be CCUs available for that call. So also send me an email if you're not already getting announcements about the SIG. Send me your email, or if you already have that, you'll be getting announcements on that. So I want to thank all of you for coming to the call today and supporting the SIG and the ICF and supporting Patty's work. So goodbye, everyone. Thank you again, Patty.
Goodbye.